You're listening to Essential Pittsburgh, and this is Steve Sokol sitting in for Paul Guggenheimer. Joining me in Studio A is Henry Reese, co-founder of City of Asylum. City of Asylum Pittsburgh was launched in 2004, and since then it has grown into a hub of activity on Pittsburgh's north side. Henry, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Steve. It's a pleasure to be here.
I'm delighted to see you, and I thought we could start our conversation by having you talk to the listeners a little bit about what City of Asylum is and what you do.
City of Asylum began with a really simple mission. We were going to provide sanctuary to writers in exile under threat of persecution.
Simple.
Reduced.
A straightforward mission.
Yes. And as the writer settled into our community and began to become involved in the community and engage, and vice versa, the community began to know the writer, the mission evolved somewhat organically over a period of years into a wide variety of activities. And now we're very deeply committed to the idea of bridging people in the community to one another and transforming the community through the arts.
Is sticking with City of Asylum sort of more on a 30,000-foot level to begin with, before we get into the community and some of the grassroots developments that have unfolded recently, is Pittsburgh's City of Asylum part of a network of other similar organizations?
Yes, we are part of an international network of Cities of Asylum, primarily in Europe and a few in universities in the United States. We are unique, though, in the world in that we're the only City of Asylum that is grassroots. All the others are funded by governments or, as I said, other institutions. And we felt it was very important that if a writer came to Pittsburgh and really to any city and settled in to make a new life, that an institution, while it could be supportive, was not the best way to be, that a community to support and make a new home was where a writer belonged to transition to potentially permanent exile, and that we should work with institutions, but an institution doesn't deal with individuals.
But there is the shared mission of providing sanctuary for writers in exile.
Yes, and the difference, again, between, say, Pittsburgh and our peers around the world is being a community-based organization, the benefits, so to speak, of our program are longer than in other places where programs around the world tend to be a year or two. Our core program does provide support for a year or two, but we allow the writer to remain in the residence that we provide indefinitely until they figured out how to become financially independent, which is really the goal. We continue to provide support in the way of translations and identification of publishers and other kinds of activity to work with the writer for that long-term security, but also with the idea that it's not just security. It's security with the ability to continue to write. That's really the core value of our program, that in coming here, we want to make sure this voice is not squelched in exile.
So how do you go about making this experience relevant for Pittsburgh and for the North Side in specific?
It's one of those things where we didn't go about doing it. It happened. It's really wonderful. I'll tell you a little story to give you a sense of just how this happens. On almost the first day that our first writer came into our program, he was an exiled Chinese poet, Wang Zhang. He began to paint calligraphies of poetry on the facade of his house. Three neighborhood teenagers came up to the house and they said, "What's going on?" And I said, "Well, this is a famous Chinese poet." And we went through a little discussion. It didn't seem to be too impressive to them. But when I said famous, it got their attention. So I said, "Would you like his autograph?" And okay, famous. He came down and on their hands, he used a little Sharpie and he put a Chinese character. And they looked at me and they said, "What is this? It's not English." And we realized then that despite the living in this community, we were living on the north side since the 1980, we had underestimated the kind of gap of understanding and what we were about to do. But the poet came down from, you know, he was down from the scaffold and he's an amazing performer. So I said to these young kids, "Would you like him to read a poem. And they kind of looked at me like, no, but I said he's going to. And he did a poem called Wild Beast. And he kind of walks up to the nose of the one child. And at the top of his lungs, he lets out a blood-curdling scream. He dives onto the ground and begins to recite this poem in Chinese. You know, kids' mouths begin to drop in the sort of really – it makes literal jaw-dropping.
They must have been mesmerized.
And they said, can he do another one? So we realized that art could bridge this gap. And that was a central epiphany, and that's sort of how everything evolved. The artists and the community in very unpredictable ways, and we watching it, we could then guide our program to make this in a more managed way happen.
And this was in 2004 that this started, right?
Yes.
With one building on Samsonia Way. In the meantime, you've got four buildings. You have a duplex that's opening, mm-hmm. and you have big plans for further development.
It's been a really exciting run in this past year and going forward are really a period of great growth for us. We've been fortunate in that this evolution has hit a sweet spot right now, I would say, in the attention to the arts, the funding for the arts, in that the idea of transforming communities through the arts and engaging communities and bridging differences both in economically and culturally are really at the core of attention right now in what the arts can do. And it makes a lot of sense in that you think about what does art do. It gets to the core of what we are as human beings, and it helps us understand others empathetically. So it's a great tool to build a better home. And we happened to be doing that unwittingly, and we discovered that there were, you know, lots of projects that could be funded that way. So we were able to do things that we had only imagined would be possible. So right now, in addition to developing these four houses or having developed that, we're developing something called the Artway, the Garden-to-Garden Connector. And this is a massive project over on the north side where we're building what we call a reading garden on the interior on three vacant lots. We're engaged in a project where we're going to be rehabbing three spaces on North Avenue in the former Masonic Temple next to the Garden Theater for a literary center with a bookstore, a reading space for performances, free book distribution, and a bar restaurant to help support the activity. And then in between it, we're going to be engaged in a series of activities that range from public artworks that are temporary in partnership with the Office of Public Art to readings and a whole series of community-based art residencies, which I'd love to talk about if we have time.
I think we have time. I mean, I'm just amazed that this Sanctuary for Exiled Writers has been able to become this real mechanism or vehicle for community development in an incredibly exciting way.
Yeah, we've had now artists since we started doing programming more actively in 2006 from 48 countries and over 200 people come to do these kind of performances. And the hallmark of our performances are collaborations, multilingual, international. So in a way, we're in a really heterogeneous, diverse community on the north side, much more so than many communities in the city. And having a home where – or having a series of programming where people are coming from around the world allows people to kind of look objectively without any bringing anything to it that's a barrier to understanding to one another in a funny way. And what we found is as we do these – we do a reading now every – sometimes two a month, and we've even done three or four a month with writers from other countries, out in public spaces, in many cases homes, streets, gardens, vacant lots. Our events are occurring on there free so that people can engage and there's no barriers to access. And that when we first started these kinds of activities, people said, nobody's interested in writing from another country. Translation in America is not something that people appreciate. What we found is that that's exactly not the case. People come from all parts of our community, different levels of education, different backgrounds, different economics, and they enjoy it. You have to learn to make it accessible and say this is not intimidating. You can enjoy it. Once people do come, they come back. We have a high degree of returns, and we're just trying to tap into something that I think has not been tapped into before.
Henry Reese from the City of Asylum, I'm just so excited about the way in which you've been able to activate public space. And from my perspective as the head of the World Affairs Council here in Pittsburgh, how you're able to make that local, global connection as well and make it really tangible. And it's not necessarily the intellectual, heady stuff of policymakers, but it's very, very thoughtful. And it really breaks down barriers between people with different cultures and different backgrounds.
There's a comment that I always remember after one of our poetry readings. And this was one where there were 300 people under a tent on a public street. Can you imagine 300 people to a poetry reading? And we got a comment back afterwards in a survey we did where someone said, you know, there's a lot of really tense issues in life, and it's really hard to talk about them, and people get really worked up. But somehow when an artist presents the same comments, they manage to do it in a way that's productive. And I think that that's the difference. We're not talking about policy, but we're talking about issues that are vitally important, and we're also sometimes just doing things that are fun. I mean, just pure
right.
fun. I mean, hopefully it's all fun. I mean, art is exciting and fun, but when the Oliver Lake Big Band comes in with 17 musicians and they're collaborating with poets from around the world, it's fun. And you've just never seen anything like it.
It's fun, but I also think it comes back to your core mission of sanctuary for writers in exile,
mm-hmm.
right? Because it's freedom of expression that we take for granted here in the United States and in our community, but a freedom of expression that some people in some places are not able to take for granted.
It's really easy to forget that this is not a value that's universal and that it's important that we protect it. And when Wang Zhang again first came here, we did a program with Rogers Middle School. And there was a young woman in the program who looked up at the poet and said, "Why were you in jail?" And he said, "For writing poetry." And this was all in translation because he spoke no English. And she looked at him and said, "I don't know what I'd do if I couldn't speak my mind." Several years later, we're having a community meeting. A woman at the meeting says, "You know, that she was in my class. And, you know, I think I'm going to start an event over here on the north side, if you'll help me, called I Don't Know What I'd Do If I Couldn't Speak My Mind." So that led to another event that we now do annually on the day of the house tour, the Mexican War Street's House and Garden Tour, where we invite people to come and read for 10 minutes, either their own work or someone else's. It's something about I don't know what I could – you know, on that theme of I don't know what I'd do if I could speak my mind. So these things evolve, and they do remind us of core values. And I think that's as you get to it, that's part of what we're doing is we're recognizing something really essential in ourselves and essential to our society in a way we can actually flourish as a democratic society.
And you have not shied away from taking on some pretty sticky issues. I mean, one of the events that you plan on an annual basis is something called Exiled Voices, which I'd like to hear you talk a little bit about. In 2012, the focus was on Iran. This past summer, the focus was on China and Tibet, and you actually had the lawyer and activist Chen Guangcheng, who has been on the front page of the New York Times and very much in the news. And you've been able to attract a number of very important people and influential people to Pittsburgh to talk about key issues. But as you say, to also have some aspects that are cultural, social, artistic, and fun.
Yeah, I think we've been successful in attracting people because, one, they get the seriousness of what we're doing and the importance. But just as importantly, they realize we're engaged in a way that is not in the mainstream of engagement processes. We're in a community. We're trying to reach out to really the broad community, not simply to policymakers or not in a kind of in a mode where it's a few people in a room at a seminar, that we're engaged in broad engagement and we're serious about projecting this idea of connection to the world. I mean, Pittsburgh for many years was a place that was central to the immigration process, to the imagination of what to make a new life in this country. Over the last century, we really don't have that kind of population of international residents. World Affairs Council, City of Asylum, and other organizations now are really involved in trying to rebuild those connections. And I think that this site where it says there's a sanctuary for the imagination, I mean, we've got a series of houses on Sampsonia Way where central to this connector we're talking about that have text written right on the outside, the one I mentioned in Chinese. There's one in Burmese where our second writer came from. There's one in English from the Nobel Prize laureate, Wole Soyinka. And there's one that we call Jazz House with a little bit of writing from an American. And this is going to be growing over time. But that making a community where the imagination is central is why I think it's so attractive to others from around the world.
Well, Henry, we'll be sure to watch the developments and the goings-on in 2014 because it sounds as if a lot of really exciting things are in store for City of Asylum.
Thank you.